Hi, everybody. We've got a fantastic episode for you today. I've got Willie Robson, a beekeeper in the UK. He works at Chainbridge Honey Farm, which is a family business established in 1948 by Willie's father. Willie has been working in the business since 1962 and now works alongside his wife and children. Chainbridge Honey Farm is based in Horncliffe, which is in the UK, but right on the Scottish border. Thanks for being with us today, Willie.
Good. Thank you.
Now, Willie, you've been keeping bees for quite a while, since 1962. Do you enjoy it? Do you love it?
Oh, yes. It's my life. You know, I brought up with bees and never really wanted to do anything else.
Yep.
So, and then we're part of the countryside, you know. We've been so long established here. All the surrounding areas for about 30 miles are well known to us, you know, and the people living in those areas are well known to us, you know. So it's a long established business.
Excellent. And do you have in those years that you've been beekeeping, do you have a funny story you'd like to share with us?
I've no doubt there are plenty, but there's one I was thinking. There was a church service in a village just over the river here. And there were bees in the church garden, and during the service, the forerunners of a swarm went into the church and were flying about above the congregation.
Oh, that would have been fun for them.
It made some of the women very annoyed. But the minister wouldn't have the bees moved. He said they were part of nature and they could stay there.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. So yeah. I've read that you're one of the biggest, maybe the biggest keeper of the English black bee in the world. Have I got that correct?
Probably, yes.
Okay. And could you tell us what it's like working with them?
Well, we've never imported any bees, you know. We've sometimes thought about it, but we've never got round to it, you know. So we just stick with the bees that we've got. Mm-hmm. And the business is very solvent, you know. Even in a bad season, it's still solvent. So in fact, they've kept us, you know. The bees have kept us, you know. So there's no real need to change. And then, of course, the climate's very poor here, you know. It's difficult climate. So the bees that we've got are adapted to the climate, you know. Great long winters of miserable weather and damp and one thing or another, you know. Mm-hmm. So the bees belong here, and they belong to us, which is you know, they're our bees. You know? So our bee, they know our routines, and we know about them as well. So we live as part of each other, you know.
Mm-hmm. And so the bee that you're using now, is it the same that it's always been since you can remember?
Always been, the Northumberland bees. The Northumberland is the county that we're in. The border bees, mm-hmm. And some of these boys have been testing them with the DNA, and they found that they're above 90% AMM. You know, mm-hmm. So they've done that. The bees have done that themselves. So they've selected themselves to suit the climate. Although there have been a lot of imports around here, the bees seem to be able to throw off the influence of the imports very quickly. They could probably throw off a big outcross maybe in the space of 10 years, and I don't know how they do that, but they're not mongrel bees, you know. They're black bees, you know, and mm-hmm. They stay as black bees, you know? So they're very sophisticated.
Yeah. And have you ever worked with a different strain of bee other than the main strain that you're using?
There were a lot of Italian bees imported, like just after the war, and they were pretty useless. They wouldn't come through the winter. And then there'd been a lot of other bees imported over the years from America and New Zealand. And more recently, there'd been bees imported from Germany, Carniolans. And they've been probably much more productive than the black bees. But we still haven't having been so long without black bees, we haven't made any attempt to replace them, you know. So that's we haven't bothered with the carniolas, but I've got friends with carniolas that produce a good bit more honey than our hives, you know. But of course, it's got to the stage now with the people that producing the big amounts of honey cannot sell it, whereas our organization's always been selling into the retail shops, and we've got a very strong brand name, so we're not affected by the slump in world prices for honey, you know. Whereas a lot of beekeepers in this country now that are producing large amounts of honey using carniolans, they can't sell it. They can't even get an offer to buy it, you know, because the market's collapsed, you know.
So how do you raise your own bees, or have you got a breeder that supplies you with these black bees?
Well, we've got a chap that does a bit of queen rearing for us, you know.
But, okay.
Just our own. We don't select them particularly. We just look at the colony and make sure that they're black, and make sure they haven't got chalk brood, and that we rear queens off them. So they're actually, they're never inbred, because they're already inbred, you know. They inbreed themselves, so we can't start inbreeding them again, you know. So we don't do much selection and we send queens to a queen rearer in the south of England, and he sends queen cells up, and we make nuclei out of them, you know. But of course, it's not very suitable for queen rearing about here, because it's that late, you know. I mean, 2 years ago, we didn't get started to beekeeping till the 12th of June because of the east wind. So it's a very short season. It can be a very short season anyway. And then again, we need to make nuclei. We've had a fair bit of bother with Varroa, and we've got the bees to the stage now where they're practically immune to Varroa. They seem to be able to cope with Varroa. Not all of them, but some of them, you know. Well, of course, the queens are changing all the time, so you get a colony that's totally immune to Varroa, and you get another one the next year that's not immune to Varroa. But that's happened over 20 years. So I would say after another 5 or 6 years, we won't have any bother with Varroa. The bees will be immune to it, you know, and the black bees are immune to every other disease as well, including European fall brood.
That's very interesting.
Well, they are. My father used to talk about total natural immunity. So Nozema and Acarin, the bees didn't get it, you know. So the way we got to that was that them that died out in the winter, good riddance, you know. You were only breeding off the ones that were totally resistant, you know. And of course, when Varroa came along, they weren't resistant. But gradually now, they're getting to the stage where you can say they were resistant, but partially resistant anyway, but 80% resistant. But the problem now is that we've had a bit of bother with viruses, you know, and which is quite common up and down the country. And really, we've no defense against that, against the viruses, except by making nuclei, you know. And of course, with the weather being as difficult, it's difficult to make nuclei because you damage the colony, you take too much out of it, you know, and might spoil its ability to get some honey, you know. So we've got to be a bit careful about making nuclei as well, you know. And I was thinking, like, well, things that I've known all my life, but it'd be better to keep 8 hives of bees in a place than 28, you know. You'd be more likely to make nuclei because they would be in a much stronger state, you know. If you could get the number of hives down to a reasonable level where the nutrition is absolutely spot on. But this area where we're living is very heavily agriculture. It's very, very intensive agriculture, which, again, it wasn't like that when I was a kid. There was no fertilizer or spray when I was a kid. So the bees didn't have to cope with that, whereas the farmers have practically ruined the countryside with endless chemicals, you know. So, again, we have to try and find places away from where the farmers are operating, you know.
Do you think that your bees are coping with Varroa better than other people who are using Italian bees or carniolan bees?
Oh, much better, yeah. We haven't used any strong chemicals for years, you know.
That's fantastic. Yeah, really interesting.
Well, that's how it has to happen, doesn't it? That's what I was taught. Total natural resistance, you know. Got that with my father. You've got to, they've got to keep bees that won't take disease, you know. Our bees won't they're most unlikely to take American foul brood as well, you know. They can be exposed to American foul brood and not take it, you know.
Okay, that's really interesting. And what are they like to work with?
Well, again, we never rough them up, so most of the time we're just it's just normal, you know. We don't rough them up, so when we arrive at the place, they're not looking for trouble, so they adapt to our way of going on, you know. And so they know if the beekeeper comes, it's not an excuse to get upset and start stinging. So people have come here and looked through our bees, and they cannot believe that they can go through them without a veil. I can go through them without a veil, you know. But if you rough them up constantly, they would soon get very nasty, you know. They adapt very quickly to the environment in which they find themselves, you know. So it's
Now, there's a.
only,
I was going
well.
to say, there's a few places around the UK where there's actual reserves for the black bee. Have you been to any of these places? Okay, because there's one in Colonsay, the Black Bee Reserve, the island in Scotland. Have you heard about that?
We know him very well. We know him because the bees have been taken there for years and years ago, you know, and then there's no imports. But our colonies have been subjected to a lot of imports round about Greek bees and Christ knows where, you know. But they still managed to throw the genes off very quickly, you know. So I think the scientists in Ireland telling us how black bees are managing to throw off the genes of the imports in a very short space of time, you know. They're not affected in the long term, you know.
Okay, so you would say that you think that there's a fairly good future for the black bee in the UK.
Not really, no, because people aren't used to looking after them.
Okay.
And of course, the temperatures are rising in the south, and the black bees don't like high temperatures. So the black bees that I've got just want to be here, and that's it. They don't want to be anywhere else, you know. They're not like modern beekeeping where the queens have to be adapted to all sorts of climates, you know. But the Carniolan bees are quite good. But sometimes the Carniolan bees are colossal swarmers, whereas our black bees, there's very little trouble with swarming, you know. They could do with being more swarms, you know. But since we've had Varroa, it's damped the swarming down, you know.
So,
Yeah.
I just wanted to finish up, ask you another question. What has been one of your favorite parts about beekeeping in the time that you've been doing it? You've been doing it since 1962. What's been one of your favorite things about beekeeping in that time?
Well, I tend to work just like I just work all the time, you know. I do a lot of selling. I quite like that, and I'm quite proud of the brand name. And I like the places where I go, you know, the places where I've gone, where I might have gone 50 years ago, I'm still going to the same places, you know, and the bees are still there. Like that's part of the enjoyment, all these parks and, you know, places. I've got bees there, and the bees have been there forever, you know. And that's a great enjoyment. You go there and have a look at some bees, but you know the bees have been there for 50 years, so that's enjoyable. And I go around the shops a lot selling. That's enjoyable. I've got a big relationship with the general public here, so the general public support our business. And we've got a showroom here as well to a very high standard. Huge big showroom, and that gives us some cash flow because previously we were lending a lot of money to the shops because the supermarkets were making the shops insolvent, little shops. But the supermarkets now are having a price war, which has driven honey in the supermarkets now is 1.50 for 12 ounces for 340 grams. It could be 1.50, and ours is £6. And yet, by and large, people would rather buy ours at £6. Supermarkets, they did affect me badly 30 years ago, but they don't affect me at all now. Got the better of them.
And another place that people can buy your honey is right there at the Chainbridge Honey Farm. You've, as you just mentioned, you've got a really nice visitor center. So do you want to tell people about what they can find there and what they can expect when they come along to visit you?
Well, the showroom's about beekeeping to a very high standard. So it's just about the honeybee and everything about it, you know, and a huge amount of pictures and information, much more information than people would be able to take in half a day, you know. So they just come and then I let them in for nothing.
Yep.
So it's they buy a bit of honey, you know, and they like it if people... Around about here, it's started to get very expensive to visit places. You know, you could have a family and they might spend £50 to get into a place and get a cup of tea, you know. So we operate the other way. They would just say we can come in for nothing. And we have a cafe, but, well, it's just a feel-good place, you know, in a very remote area. We're in a remote area and it's a feel-good place. It's just the way we've been all our lives, you know, just countrymen. We're just countrymen, you know.
And I'll ask you one more question, Willie. With all of your years of beekeeping experience, what would be one bit of advice you'd give to a beekeeper that's starting up?
Well, he has to get in with somebody that actually knows what they're doing, you know. It's not written in books what to do, but you need something to get in with somebody who's very like gentle with the bees, who can actually go through them without getting stung. Because if a beginner's going through hives and getting stung, it's not good, you know. You've got to learn how to handle them, you know, to start with, and you would have to do that watching somebody else that could handle them, you know. Well,
that's great advice. Yeah. Well, Willie, thanks a lot for being with us today. And I know you're very busy, so thanks a lot for your time. And I wish you all the best for the upcoming season.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hey, everyone. Just to let you know that after we finished recording, Willie and I got to talking about Brother Adam. And he told me that Brother Adam had come to visit him a few times over the years to see his black bees and all that kind of stuff. So I thought I'd turn on recording again, and here's that story for you. I've just got Willie back here, and we were just having a quick chat after the podcast ended, and he told me that he had Brother Adam come to visit him a few times. So, Willie, do you want to tell us a little bit about that visit from Brother Adam, or those visits?
Well, he didn't like black bees, you know, because there were he didn't like them, and that was it, because there would be probably stinging him, although he wasn't much bothered about stings, you know, but he tried to breed a super bee, you know, whereas our business is the absolute opposite of what he was trying to do. We are actually allowing the bees to do their own thing, whereas he was working on with them and getting them, well, I think he had them on double dadens, you know, but I never criticized them, my father never criticized them. But the thing was that agriculture in Great Britain and England was all based on white clover, and that would be particularly so in Devon. And then what happened was that in about 1960, they started to make artificial nitrogen. So all the clover fields were wiped out, and they started to spray in the fields, and the spray killed the clover. So the clover, the wild white clover, was indigenous. It belonged to Devon, or it belonged to Northumberland. It belonged there. And in a half decent year, it generated a great amount of honey. Well, the thing was that once that clover disappeared, Brother Adam's bees were much too strong. They were much too populous, but nothing for them. And you had to feed them in the summer. You know, well, our bees, we hardly ever have to feed them because they're self-sufficient, you know. But there was a big spell between about 1960 and 1980 where there was very little for bees in England, you know. It wasn't until they started growing canola that there was plenty for them, you know, and they got going again, you know. So a brother would find that his bees were too strong, and they're too powerful, you know.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, well, thanks for sharing that little bit of extra story for us. That's very interesting.
Yeah. Oh, well, anytime.
Okay, well, I hope you enjoyed that episode, having a chat with Willie. Great start to the story, with the funny story in the church, which I thought was really, really good. He's been keeping bees since 1962. How about that? That's really amazing. Three things that I thought were really interesting about that podcast. Number one, total natural immunity. This is something that Willie talked about several times throughout the episode, and what he means by it basically is a self-sufficient line of bees. No matter what's happening through the seasons, different pests that are coming through, different diseases, the bees maintain themselves over time. And considering he's been keeping bees since 1962 and he's had that attitude the whole time and it's worked, I think that's a great inspiration to the rest of us. Number two, maintaining relationships. So when I asked Willie what was his favorite part about the industry, one of the things he said was maintaining the relationships with the people who buys his honey. So that's not only the people in the shops who supply his honey, but also the general public. And he's got that great visitor center. So if you're in the UK and you'd like to learn about beekeeping, try checking out the visitor center. I'll link that in the show notes. Number three, Brother Adam's bee was too strong for Willie's purposes. Now, if you don't know who Brother Adam is, try checking out episode one of this podcast, where I go into a lot of detail about Brother Adam's career creating the Buckfast bee. And this is the bee that Willie tried a few times, and he said it was too strong, it built up too much in the spring, he had to maintain it by feeding it in the summer, and it just didn't work for him. So those are three things that I thought were really interesting about the podcast. I'd love to know what you thought, and you can do that by going to the Facebook group for this podcast. It's called Breeding the Honeybee. I'll link it in the show notes. And go find the episode post, go to the comments, and just leave me a comment letting me know what you thought was really interesting. I'd love the feedback. That'd be really, really great. So that's Breeding the Honeybee, the Facebook group, and I'll link that in the show notes. Now, next month, I've got another great episode coming up for you. I've got Brandon Michael Simmons. Brandon is from North Carolina in the USA, and he's got a business breeding bees using artificial insemination. So if you're someone who's thinking about getting into AI and you'd like to know what it's like, Brandon's going to tell us all about what it's like to get started. So that's next month's episode. If you don't want to miss it, make sure you subscribe. And until next time, thanks so much for tuning in.